Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 160 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
I'm good, man. How about you?
I'm doing great. You're a little under the weather. Not too bad, but...
Yeah, it's a little bit under the weather, but I'll be all right.
Yeah, you don't sound bad, but I know you've not been feeling great.
160 episodes, man.
It's amazing.
It's almost to your high school body weight.
Yeah. I probably was about 160 when I graduated from high school.
A little side note there.
Yeah. I'm only just slightly above that now.
Just slightly.
Just slightly. Just
a tad.
You know, maybe that guy and another half of that guy.
Maybe. Maybe.
And you've got me now.
As we get closer to that episode, we'll let you know.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do something where I've got to get down to, I don't know, whatever. As the episodes get higher, I've got to stay underneath the episode count.
Maybe your body weight catches up to the episodes coming up. And
right. That's what I'm saying. Like, and then I got to stay underneath it for sure. So I went to the dentist earlier this week.
You braved it.
Braved it. Got my crown.
Yeah.
Which I had never done before. It's not a pleasant experience. It wasn't really as bad as I thought.
Like a prince now or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
I am a prince.
Yeah.
I'm a king. Why would I be a prince? I'm a king.
Well, that's true. So, you said you got your crown.
No, I went to Burger King, got the crown, and then I went to the dentist.
Okay.
No, I got a crown and was talking to my dentist about Glennon Engelman.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the other folks that worked there, and they're like, oh, gosh, we got to listen to that, so...
Awesome.
That's how word of mouth works.
Yeah. Maybe they're doing other procedures today while they listen to that case.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll have the case on while people are in the chair, but you never know.
How awesome would that be, though?
That would be pretty cool. So, Gibbs, we have some new Patreon supporter shout outs to give. We had Sierra Anise.
Hey, Sierra.
Molly Scott.
What's going on, Molly Scott?
Lisa Minton.
Hey, Lisa.
Catherine Lauer.
Hey, Catherine.
Jessica Feeney.
What's going on, Feeney?
Daniel Giles.
Hey, Daniel.
Jessica Kirkham.
Hey, Jessica.
Shepard Fargostein.
Hey, Fargenstein. How you doing?
You called him Fargenstein, who's actually been with us a very long time. I think, you know, people drop off, they come back. I remember Shep. I think he's down in Memphis somewhere, or close to Memphis, or Nashville. I don't know. I get them all confused.
Yeah. The Tennessee area?
He's definitely in Tennessee. Deidre Fry.
Hey, Deidre.
John Woolley.
What's going on, John?
April Ritchie.
April.
Lisa.
Hey, Lisa.
Sarah Elias.
Hey, Sarah.
Jason Robinson.
What's going on, Jason?
Amy Gray.
Hey, thanks, Amy.
Wendy.
Just Wendy.
Just Juliet.
And just Juliet.
Nicole Alley.
Hey, Nicole.
And Alley.
And Alley.
Misty Starkey.
Hey, Misty.
I added that for you. I think her name is Nicole Alley, but I added that for you because you like to separate first names.
Well, sometimes I do.
Where'd I stop?
Misty.
I stopped at Misty. Okay. Misty Starkey.
Yeah.
Chad T.
Hey, what's up, Chad T?
So technically, he's Mr. T.
Oh, man, how cool would that be?
Technically, the guy can go by Mr. T.
That would be cool.
Ashley.
Hey, Ashley.
Now, he's got to have the big chains, all that.
Yeah.
The gold chains.
I'd go out and get them right now if I was him.
I would, too. The Stitching Panda.
Hey, oh, the Stitching Panda.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad it's stitched.
And pretty.
And pretty.
Which, if you think about it, takes a lot of nerve to actually put that in your name.
Sure.
Now, I'm sure she was either born with it or she married into it, but still.
But they also could have gave her a different first name, which could have really messed it up. So,
Very?
Or
not so?
Or
her first name is Not So.
Not So?
No. I'm sure she's lovely.
Beautiful.
We had Karen Robinson.
Hey, Karen.
Pamela John.
What's going on, Pamela?
And last but not least, Jen Whitman.
Hey, Jen.
And then we go back into the vault, Gibbs.
Okay.
This week, we selected Stu Watson.
Go, what's happening, Stu?
Stu's been with us a long time. We appreciate that. We also had some PayPal support as well. Okay. Jillian Jaeger.
Hey, JJ.
Birgit Madsen.
Really?
Now, she's a Patreon supporter.
Yeah.
And I think I called her Brigitte, which she said was not even close. So I think she's from the Scandinavian countries, somewhere over there. So I tried my hand at it again. I'm going with Birgit.
So what's up, Birgit?
We'll see. She'll let me know.
Yeah.
Julie Shantz, hey, or Shantz, and Michelle Slocum.
Slocum?
Mm-hmm. Slocum if you got them.
Slocum if you got them.
So a lot of great support, right? Patreon, PayPal, it's all amazing, especially around the holidays.
Yeah.
You know, money gets tight. We understand that. You got a lot of gifts to buy. The right. Presents have to be put under the tree, or, you know, if there's no tree, they got to be put somewhere.
Yeah.
It's a tough time of year for many. So
definitely appreciate it.
We extra appreciate the support that we get around the holidays because we just know money is tighter.
Always is towards the end of the year.
So right now, Gibbs, on True Crime All the Time Unsolved, we have an episode out on the Chen family.
We do. Up in near Albany, New York.
Yep. I don't know why you picked another case in New York. You know there's going to be city issues.
Yeah.
Name city name issues. Hopefully we're not going to Chai Lai.
No Chai Lai.
To talk about anything.
No Chai Lai. But yeah, this is an interesting case. You know, I mean, a quadruple murder, a lot of branches, a lot of twists and turns. And, you know, we bring the Chinese mafia into it.
Well, hey, is that the Yakuza? Or is that the Japanese mafia?
I think that's the Japanese
mafia. I get mafia. Confused on which nationality the Yakuza. And you have to say it, Yakuza.
Yakuza.
But anytime you're bringing either the Japanese, the Chinese, or any type of mafia in, things can get a little scary.
A little bit. So it's definitely a good case. And check it out.
Yep. Absolutely. Check that out. We had a little technical difficulty with our Reviews Are In podcast this past week. We didn't get one out.
Yeah.
But we're committed to getting one out Tuesday. And then I think we'll probably take a break for maybe the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Come back January.
Sounds good.
But look for a new one out this coming Tuesday. All right, buddy. Are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time?
I'm set, man.
We're headed to Rhode Island to talk about serial killer Jeffrey Mailhot. Kind of a strange name, a name that you don't hear very often.
Never heard it before.
It's a great name for a postal worker.
Yeah.
Which I know we have a lot of.
We do.
Now, what's interesting is when you look up the name Jeffrey Mailhot, there are a few Jeffrey Mailhots. Yeah. One appears to be a prominent doctor.
Oh.
I don't know what part of the country he's in.
Doctor.
So I do think this is our first trip to Rhode Island. I could be wrong. With 160 episodes, it's hard to remember each and every one.
Yeah.
But I don't remember us ever going to Rhode Island. Do you?
I do not remember.
Because number one, it's the smallest state in the country.
It is.
By area.
Right.
I should put that. I think it's like, as far as people, it's probably fifth or sixth smallest.
Yeah.
But by area, I don't think there's any doubt it's by far the smallest.
Yeah, I know population-wise, it's going to be a little bit heavier, just being so close to that, you know, the Boston market, and not the Boston market where you go get the food.
I was going to say. Yeah, I just said it's like fifth or sixth.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I'm just messing with you. But it doesn't matter what state you're in, right? When you're in the United States, no matter what state, there are serial killers.
Trouble everywhere.
There have been serial killers. There's just no way around it. Rhode Island is no exception. Now, they've had a lot less than most states.
True.
For sure. But I think Jeffrey Mailhot is one of their worst, their most infamous serial killers. Jeffrey Mailhot was what people who knew him referred to as a normal guy. And I'm using my air quotes there.
Like myself?
Just very normal. Much like yourself. Whatever a normal guy is, whatever that definition is, that's what he was. I guess what they mean really is that there were not any signs for them,
right,
that this guy Mailhot was running around killing and dismembering sex workers, which is what he did.
Right.
So outside of that, which apparently they didn't know about, everyone knew him as a swell guy, much like yourself.
Just a swell guy.
Swell guy.
Yeah.
And I do think this guy is somewhat of an anomaly when it comes to serial killers. At least the ones that we've profiled. And we've done 160 cases now. There just wasn't much at all in the research about a bad childhood. Gibbs, this guy didn't even have a criminal record at the time police caught up to him for murdering three women.
Oh, well, I can't say that.
No, you can't say that.
No.
Are you saying you murdered three women?
No, no, I just can't say I don't have a criminal record.
Well, I know.
You know.
Most people can't. I mean, depending on what you're calling a criminal record.
Well, I had to wear that anklet device forever.
Yeah, we know what. For the first 2 years of the podcast, I think you had to wear that.
Yeah.
So let's jump into his background. This is not going to blow anybody away. I just kind of, you know, gave that part up. Jeffrey Mailhot was born on November 9th, 1970. He grew up in Cumberland, Rhode Island. Cumberland is a town in northeastern Rhode Island that borders up against Massachusetts.
Oh, you sure it's Cumberland?
Yeah, it could be Cumberland.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll find out.
There just really wasn't much, like I said, in this guy's childhood that would make you think he's later on, you know, later in life going to do these terrible things. He lived with his parents. He had a sister. You know, people that knew him as a kid said that he was pretty much a loner. Didn't hang out with a lot of the other children. We sometimes see that when it comes to serial killers. At some point, the family moved to Woonsocket, Rhode Island.
That's a fun name to say.
It is a fun name. There's actually a lot of fun names in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Pawtucket. You know, I can't think about a lot of the town names without thinking about Family Guy.
Right.
You know, so we're in that area of the country. Woonsocket's about 50 miles south of Boston, to put it in perspective. So within an hour, you're in Boston, can visit Cheers and catch a game at Fenway.
Yeah, I could go see some of my mom's old family.
That's right. You go some Southies.
Yeah, take the train in. What's up, people?
So it was in Woonsocket that Jeffrey attended high school. His parents divorced when he was 9. And then later, his mother and father both died from cancer.
So tragic.
Yeah, tragic, but something that a lot of people go through.
Yeah, it's not out of the norm.
No, not at all. His mother died when he was 17. His father died when he was 22. So even then, it didn't happen when he was super young. Never easy, though, at all. Mailhot graduated from high school the year after his mother died, 1989. I did read one interesting thing about his high school yearbook photo. Apparently he wasn't in it.
Oh.
And the yearbook just listed where his photo should be. It just said camera shy.
Camera shy.
So that's a little strange.
That's even more strange that they put camera shy.
Yeah. Normally I would have thought there just wouldn't be a place or a name or anything.
Right.
But it sounded like, okay, they had the little oval where his picture would have been.
Yeah.
It listed his name, and maybe in the oval it just said camera shy. I could be wrong. I didn't see a picture of it.
Yeah, I think in my yearbooks, when someone wasn't there, they just put the little block. with no picture, and then the name underneath it. And you're like, yeah, well, clearly they missed that day.
Yes. You know? But to put camera shy.
That's weird.
Seemed a little strange. I thought it was interesting enough to bring up. I know you weren't in your senior picture either, but your little, it just said too good looking for the yearbook.
Sure, I wasn't at Juvie that time.
Or you could have been at Juvie, but they still put too good looking to be in the yearbook.
Hey, I can't control what other people do.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't you because you wouldn't have been on the yearbook staff. We know that. You definitely we know that. So it was probably, you know, someone that was interested in you, had the hots for you, and just said, you know what? We know Gibby's in Juvie. Well, this is funny. We'll put this.
Well, she did run the yearbook staff for many years before and many years after I left. Talking about the teacher?
Yeah. I was actually talking about a student, but...
Oh, did I let too much out?
Yeah, you might have let too much out. So Jeffrey Mailhot continued to live in Woonsocket up until the time he was caught for his crime. So this is a guy that didn't venture away, didn't, you know, move away for a job or college or anything like that. He essentially grew up in Woonsocket, went to school there, graduated there, and made his home there. So I know, pretty boring when it comes to a serial killer's childhood, but that's it. I mean, it's just not there. We can't make it up. That was this guy's life.
Yeah, pretty nonchalant.
Yeah, I think, you know, by all accounts, Gibbs, the guy was just a pretty average Joe. If you believe him and you believe the police, he didn't start murdering until he was about 32, 33 years old.
Then we're going to have to, because there's nothing out there before all that.
Yeah, there's no evidence that he did. I mean, this is what he has said, admitted to. This is what police have come to the conclusion on. This was a guy that police said, I mentioned he didn't have a criminal record.
Right.
He never even had a parking ticket on his record.
What?
In 32, 33 years of life.
You think he'd have that living where he was living? I mean, all those people compressed in that tiny little state, you know? Where are you going to park your car?
You're going to have a parking ticket somewhere?
Yeah.
So, as an adult, he lived in a first floor apartment of what was said to have been a four-unit house. So, it sounded to me like a house that was later converted into a four-unit building.
Yeah.
This was located at 221 Cato Street in Woonsocket. But here's the important thing. He was the only one there. Out of the four units, he was the only one living in one of the units. Apparently, there was a report that there was a lady that lived in a unit next, you know, adjoining his, but she passed away.
Oh.
And so that left him there all by himself, which I think is important as we start to talk about his crimes, because his crimes occur inside this unit.
Well, that makes a difference, because trust me, I live on a first floor unit, and above me is a 80-pound female that I swear, I don't know what she's got strapped to her back, but it sounds like she's got an elephant on her. Every time she walks anywhere.
So what you're saying is she's like my wife and my youngest daughter.
Yeah.
You know, my wife weighs nothing. She's a little person. I mean, she's small, you know,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But she sounds like she's bringing an army with her. You know it.
Oh, man.
When she walks across the living room or the kitchen, which is above us where we are in the studio.
Yeah.
It sounds like she's invading a neighboring country and bringing 10,000 soldiers with her.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like they brick slippers on or something. I don't know. But like, even the one above me, you know, I'm trying to figure out why you take a bath at 1 o'clock and another one at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's how easy you can hear things, you know?
Yeah.
So I can see where
she probably wonders why you are stalking her and know.
Well, that's true.
Like her daily activities.
So here you are flipping it on me.
Hopefully she's not listening to this episode. Hey,
hopefully she doesn't hear what goes on down underneath her.
Exactly. But I do think it's important, right, to point that out. Four units.
Yeah.
He's the only one living there. Now, adding on to this average Joe persona, this is a guy who worked a full-time job as a machine operator at a company called Proma Technologies. He never missed work. He's like you, Gibbs. Very conscientious worker, just said, you know what? I'm going in every day. I don't care.
Yeah. I'm not even supposed to be here today, and I'm here. How do you like that, boss man?
He worked out at a gym on a regular basis. There was some talk that, you know what, he kind of fancied himself a bodybuilder.
Okay.
And I do think the guy was in great shape, you know, much like myself. I fancy myself a bodybuilder.
You do fancy yourself.
I don't do any of the things that it would take to get me there, but I fancy myself one.
Well, and you're building your body. Just you're concentrating a lot in a different area right now.
It's building up. Yeah. It has been building up over many, many years. It's a lot of dedication, I'll be honest with
you. Yeah, you put in the time in.
But I have to describe Jeffrey Mailhot. He was 5'3". Well, and I'm assuming still is. 5'3".
Right.
Weighed 170 pounds.
Yeah.
Was not an obese guy.
We call that a bulldog.
Yeah. I mean, this was a pretty short for a man.
Yeah.
But fit, stocky, powerful.
Yeah.
He was powerfully built. He rode a Harley.
Like yourself.
Much like myself. But I think it's important to point out, you know, this wasn't a guy that was some vagrant moving from town to town, targeting women. We've talked about a lot of serial killers like that. That wasn't Jeffrey Mailhot. He had lived in Woonsocket for a long time, held a steady job. People said he was clean cut, always shaven, showered, nicely dressed. I mean, you know, he had his you-know-what together.
Well, you know, sounds like he was a clean-cut guy.
Yeah. No, I believe he was. It was reported that he liked to sing karaoke in some of the local bars.
Like you.
Like I do.
Yeah.
I do like karaoke a lot.
The weird part for you, though, is you sing it when there's no karaoke machine around.
No, I don't need the karaoke machine.
You just try to get the whole, I'll call it for you, audience to participate around the bar. A little awkward sometimes when I hang out with you.
It is. It is. But people get a kick out of it. But so I think the one thing that I definitely want to make clear, Jeffrey Mailhot had friends. He went out with people to some of these karaoke bars. He wasn't a total loner as an adult, as we've seen with some serial killers. Now, it runs the gamut. You've got people that have families and tons of friends that turn out to be serial killers. The thing about Jeffrey Mailhot was that he had a dark side that no one knew about. He liked to hang out in some of the areas around town where drugs were sold, where the sex workers plied their trade. And it was in one of these areas that in February of 2003, Mailhot selected his first victim. This was 33-year-old Audrey Harris. Audrey was a sex worker. And Mailhot picked her up in his Chevy Blazer, and they went back to his apartment. Pretty much as soon as they got inside, not long after he closed the door, I think, he put his hands around her neck and choked this woman to death.
He decided if he was going to do it, he was going to get it done right then.
Well, and this is going to play out in pretty, you know, in all of his murders. He was a strangler. You know, this was a guy that chose to kill by wrapping his hands around the neck of a female and literally squeezing the life out of her. And that takes a certain type of person.
It does. And we've talked about this with a few different serial killers over the 3 years. I mean, Tommy Lynn Sells, and there have been many. The power they get out of taking somebody's life while they're strangling them and then watching what they describe the life leaving the body. It's a big thrill, and I think maybe sexual for some of them.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a rush. It's a, I mean, there's a bunch of different words I think you could use for it, but in the end, it's what they get out of doing it, right? And it's what they need to satisfy whatever urge that is compelling them to do this. You can call it frog demon, you can call it whatever you want.
Right.
But there is something inside these individuals that, you know, when you're not talking about someone that's killing for money, like we did in the last episode with Engelman.
Yeah.
When you're not talking about a murder that happens because somebody caught their spouse in bed. This is, you know, you're not talking about revenge or any of those types of things. You're simply talking about killing for the sake of killing.
Yeah, the thrill.
So that's where there has to be something in it because none of the other elements exist, right? Money, right. Revenge, whatever. So there has to be a rush, a thrill, something that is compelling these individuals to do what they do. Now, again, if you believe Jeffrey and you believe the police, this was his first kill. And apparently Gibbs, he had no idea what he was supposed to do next. So he had made the decision, I am going to pick up a sex worker this night. I believe he was drunk by some reports. I'm going to take her back to my house and I'm going to strangle her to death.
Right.
But after that, I have no plans.
Now what I do, I got this lifeless body laying on my floor.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what I believe happened is that, like I said, I think he was intoxicated. He went to bed. At some point, you're going to pass out.
Yeah.
You get up the next morning and realize, you know what? I've got a dead body in my house.
Yeah. Shocker.
And I've not thought ahead and have no idea what I'm going to do with this dead body.
Yeah. I have to get it out of here.
So reports are that he stayed in the apartment for 2 days trying to figure out what his next steps were.
You know, it's really strange, man. It makes you wonder what conversations he had with himself because it was just him at that point.
Sure. So, you're not inviting anybody else over for tea and crumpets when you have a dead body in your house.
So you just wonder what conversations he had with himself every hour as he stood and looked at that lifeless body, you know, trying to figure out what he was going to do.
I think it's a great question. And obviously we don't know the answer. We can speculate back and forth. You know, I think this was something that I'm sure he had been thinking about for a long time. I doubt it was completely 100% spontaneous.
Right.
There was probably a degree of spontaneity in it, but he probably fantasized about doing this or something like this for a period of time. We know killers do, and then eventually they act upon it.
Right.
The part that he hadn't thought out at all was, after the murder, what he was going to do with this body. And then an idea came to him. We'll explain how it came to him a little bit later on when he talks to police. He drove to a hardware store and bought a saw, drove back to his apartment, put the body of Audrey Harris in his bathtub, and used the saw to dismember it.
I wonder, when you buy a saw like that, do you get the metal saw or you get the wood saw? Or maybe this is an all-purpose saw.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw it described, I think, in one article as a bow saw.
As a bow saw?
Yeah. But I would think you would want some pretty fine teeth.
Yeah.
Something that probably that you could saw metal with. It is my thinking.
To get through the bone.
Bone is very hard.
Yeah. Interesting, though.
Yeah, you say that like a serial killer. And I'm looking at you and you're like, ooh, it's an interesting conundrum.
Yeah. You just wanted to use the word conundrum.
And then I wanted to have you try to say it and you butchered it.
And I did butcher it.
But this is why you scare people, making these kind of comments.
That Gibby, I tell you what.
We don't know. We can't figure this guy out. All right, Gibbs, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsors. Support for True Crime All the Time comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home is so much more than a house. It's your own little slice of heaven. So that's why when you find the perfect place for you and your family, getting a mortgage shouldn't get in the way. Rocket Mortgage has a team of mortgage experts that are obsessed with finding a better way, which means their number one goal is to make the home buying process smoother for you. They're changing the game with industry-leading online lending technology developed in the heart of Detroit. Quicken Loans has helped millions of Americans achieve their dream of home ownership. So when you're ready to purchase the home of your dreams, they can help you too. When you work with them, you get more than just a loan, because Rocket Mortgage is more than just a lender. So visit rocketmortgage.com/TCAT and take the first step toward the home of your dreams. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. Next, we have to talk about Perfect Bar. This is something that my whole family is in love with. So if you're looking to freshen up your snack game, Perfect Bar is the original refrigerated protein bar. Yeah, it's refrigerated. That means they're free from chemical preservatives and they're stored in the fridge for optimal taste and texture. These bars are made from 20 organic superfoods. They have up to 17 grams of whole food protein and they have a cookie dough-like texture that it tastes amazing. So you have the nutrition, but they're also delicious. They have a wide variety of flavors. My wife likes the dark chocolate peanut butter. I really like the coconut peanut butter. But just because they're stored in the fridge, that does not mean they cannot be taken on the go. They can. They're actually good for up to 1 week outside of the fridge. So right now, Perfect Bar is offering 15% off your online order. Just go to perfectbar.com/TCAT. Shop their refrigerated snacks at perfectbar.com/TCAT today to get 15% off your order. Gibby and I want you to be seasonally prepared. So go to perfectbar.com/TCAT to stock up and save 15%. And last up is Quip. This is a product that my whole entire family has been using for over a year. Everybody loves it. And this is a great time of year to give Quip as a gift. It's sure to put a smile on everyone's mouth because it's dental care that they'll actually want to use every day. Quip is the perfect, thoughtful, and practical gift with an electric toothbrush, refillable floss, and toothpaste, all intentionally designed to make good habits simple. The Quip electric toothbrush has sensitive sonic vibrations with a timer that pulses every 30 seconds to guide your routine. It tells you when to switch quadrants. It also tells you how long you should be brushing. Plus, Quip delivers brush heads, floss, and toothpaste refills every 3 months. Join over 3 million happy customers and check everyone off your gift list right now with Quip. Just go to getquip.com/TCAT to save on gift sets and to get your first refill free with a refill plan. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/TCAT. getquip.com/TCAT. Mailhot has dismembered his first victim, but that's just part of the problem that you have.
Yeah. So now you have all these pieces.
Pieces and parts, not to get too gruesome, but that's literally what you have.
Now what are you going to do?
So what he chose to do is put the parts and the saw and kind of everything into garbage bags, wait till dark, then load the garbage bags into a Chevy Blazer, drive around town, depositing the bags in various dumpsters around town.
So this is how big of a piece of shit this guy is, right? Not only did he murder somebody for the thrill, he then took her apart and disposed of her. This is somebody's sister, daughter.
Sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And he just treats her like that.
You can look at it two ways, right? Murder is the ultimate sin. Right?
Sure.
But then to desecrate, to dismember the body and essentially throw it away because, I mean, this is not even dumping it in a remote area of, you know, some wooded area. This is literally putting the pieces of the body in a trash bag, putting it in a dumpster that you know is going to end up in a landfill. The same place that you would put your normal trash.
Right.
And we'll talk about it as the episode goes along because you have the family that, you know, in some cases, they don't have their loved one.
No.
Some of these women are never found. And so there is no chance to have a burial. That's tough. Very tough. And speaking of Audrey's family in particular, it was her mother that was the last person to talk to her. In this last phone call between Audrey and her mother, Audrey said that she was coming home for a visit, but she never made it. Her mother called police to report her missing when she didn't hear from her, and police opened up an investigation. Now, meanwhile, Jeffrey Mailhot went back to his very normal kind of ho-hum life.
Work, gym, work, gym, work, gym.
Yeah.
All karaoke.
And that was about everything that he did, right? Those were his normal routines. It's kind of like lather, rinse, repeat, right? He did these things every day I don't know if he sang karaoke every day, but he went to work every day. I think he probably worked out every day, and maybe on the weekends he would go to bars with friends and sing karaoke. But committing his first murder, Gibbs, didn't stop him from leading his life. It wasn't like what he had done was such a big thing in his life that it shut down everything and he retreated. No, he just continued to do what he had done before.
Yeah, he rebounded.
Sure. I don't know that it affected him all that deeply. That's a scary thing in and of itself.
I'm assuming he still took his showers in that bathtub that he did that to her body.
I guarantee it. But then he had his first failure as a serial killer. It was in February 2004. So this is a year later, right? He didn't do anything for an entire year after committing his first murder. In February 2004, he attacked a woman named Tease Morris in his home. Very similar, right? Got her back to his apartment on the idea that they were going to have sex for money. But this one didn't go as male hot planned. He tried to choke this woman, but Morris fought back, fought him tooth and nail, was able to get away, get out of the house, and eventually filed a complaint with the police.
So she went all Jack Reacher on him.
She did, which is actually a very apt comparison, given the fact that Jeffrey Mailhot is 5'3".
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise aspires to be 5'3". He'd like to be 5'3".
Yeah.
And plays Jack Reacher. I give Tom Cruise a hard time. I feel bad. There's probably some Tom Cruise fans out there like, why can't you leave Tom alone?
Tom's probably listening, thinking, man, what did I ever do to this guy? But Team Gibby.
Hey, Tom's done a lot in his life.
Yeah.
He's done some things that are viewed as a little off the beaten path. Let's put it that way. And I'm going to leave it at that because I don't want to get in trouble with a certain sect of the community, if you know what I mean.
Just let it go, man.
I don't want to be surveilled. I don't want none of that.
No, don't need that.
2 months later, Jeffrey Mailhot targeted 42-year-old Christine Dumont. Christine was a sex worker, and she willingly got into Mailhot's Chevy Blazer on a night in April 2004. Gibbs, this crime unfolded in a very similar fashion to his first murder. He drove Dumont back to his place pretty quickly, I think, after getting inside and him shutting the door. He strangled her and dismembered her body. And then again, he loaded up the Blazer with garbage bags full of this woman's body parts, drove all over town, dropping them into different dumpsters. Christine's relatives reported her missing very quickly, and it was reported that she left behind some uncashed disability checks. And that's obviously something that a person who was going to take off on their own accord wouldn't do.
No, it's not something that would make any sense to anybody.
No, because if you're going to leave, let's say, okay, you've made the decision, you're going to leave the area, you're going to start a new life, you need a change of venue. You're going to want to take all the money that you have with you. You're not going to leave some uncashed disability checks just sitting around. Not going to happen. It was after this murder that Jeffrey Mailhot had his second stumble as a serial killer. He picked up a woman named Jocelyn Martell, and the two made a sex for money arrangement. Basically, this was his MO, right?
Right.
He targeted sex workers. He took Martell back to his place as he had with his first two victims. But Gibbs, this time things didn't go according to plan. After they got inside, he grabbed this woman by the throat and started choking her.
Well,
but this woman went all Jason Bourne, Jean Von Claude Von Damme, whatever his name is.
She broke it all out.
What's his name?
Von Claude Damme.
No.
Claude Van Damme.
There's a Jean in there somewhere.
Jean Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, there you go. I think you got it right that time. She kicked his ass. She fought back very hard. She headbutted him, which for anyone who has not been headbutted by another human being, it will definitely rock you.
Yeah, it could work to your advantage or to your disadvantage, depending how you do it.
Yes, you have to do it correctly, right? You have to hit the other person in the part of their head while kind of getting more of the top of your head.
It's all about the angle.
It is a lot to do with the angle. However she did it, it worked.
We were just talking about Tom Cruise a minute ago. I wonder how he would do his head butting, because he's got to jump in the air somehow. Or,
well, so movie magic, he's already standing on a 6-foot ladder.
Oh, there you go.
That's how he does his headbutt. But in real life, you're right. He'd probably just hit somebody in the chest. They'd laugh at him and
it'd be over with. Yeah.
I feel bad getting on Tom Cruise.
Poor Tom,
so bad.
Poor Tom. But I mean, there's other dirty fighting methods too.
Well, there is. And she's going to employ another one, which is, I think, one that's often taught in some of the classes.
Yeah.
I think the one most often taught is the knee to the groin.
Yes.
You know, as a female, if you're attacked by a male, the knee to the groin is kind of a staple, because anybody that's been, you know, kicked in the coconuts knows.
Yeah.
That'll put you down.
Quickly.
Very quickly. It's hard to recover and it takes a little while.
Nothing enjoyable about having your coconut split in two.
No. But that's not what she does. She uses the thumb eye gouge.
Oh.
Which is another really good move.
It is a really good one.
And it drops him. Between the headbutt and the thumb eye gouge, she's able to get away from this guy.
You know, I mean, you're fighting for your life.
So
everything's off the table, right? I mean, you're going to...
Everything's on the table.
Or everything's on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to be, you know, thumbs in the eyes. You're going to be putting knee as hard as you can into the groin. You're going to...
There's no rules. This is
exactly.
Not, this is not a boxing match. This is not even a UFC fight.
Claw, scratch,
bite. You do whatever you have to do to save your life. There are no rules. You're not going to be disqualified.
This is when you get as crazy as you possibly ever could.
So he kind of took a beating.
Yeah.
And, you know, was trying to figure out what the heck is going on. She was able to escape. But Mailhot wouldn't wait long to claim his third victim. 24-year-old Stacy Goulet was last seen at a 4th of July fireworks show at a park in Woonsocket. She was known to police to have been a sex worker. Jeffrey picked up Stacy at that fireworks show and took her back to his place where he killed her. And Gibbs, just like with his two previous victims, he dismembered Stacy's body with a saw, bagged up her body parts, and dumped them at different locations around town. I think at this point, it's pretty safe to say, police were already concerned about the fact that they had a killer on the loose. Well, they don't know these women are dead, but they have to be concerned that a number of women have gone missing. Because these women were all reported.
Right. So missing in a short period of time.
They have to be worried that something is going on. There may be a killer. And I think that would just be heightened after this third report regarding Stacy. You have another sex worker that seemingly vanished off the face of the earth. So they know they have an issue, but they have no idea what happened to these women. And certainly Jeffrey Mailhot was not on their radar, at least not for a few days. This is one of those cases, Gibbs, where, you know, it's not going to be a years long search for the killer. This is not a serial killer who operated in multiple years, multiple decades. No, he operated over a couple of years. He killed three women. But after the third murder, they're on to him pretty quickly. But it's the way they get on to him that is fascinating. Because things started heating up when, just a few days after Stacy Goulet vanished, the police received an anonymous tip. And this tip came in from a man who said that police should go talk to a woman named Jocelyn Martell.
Okay.
We've already talked about Jocelyn.
Yeah.
We know what happened to her. So I'm thinking the police were like, okay, number one, who is Jocelyn Martell? And number two, why do we need to go talk to her? But it wasn't hard for them to figure out and track her down, because Martell was in jail at the time on a parole violation. So they went to talk to her. and find out what, if anything, she knew about the disappearances of these three women. She didn't know anything about these three women or their disappearances. I think she probably worked in the same circles as they did.
Right.
I'm sure she was familiar with who they were, but she had no idea what had happened to them. But she did have a very interesting story for police. She told them all about her encounter with a short, stocky man who tried to choke her in his residence. And the thing about Martell was that she was able to provide police with enough information about where this guy lived. I don't know if she gave them the exact address, because I don't know if she would have remembered that.
Right.
But she knew enough to lead police to the right area. And that led police to find the complaint made in February by Tease Morris, right? So they get to the, at least to the right street. I don't know if they got to the exact right house, but they're looking at Cato Street, which is where Jeffrey Mailhot lived. They go back and they look for other complaints involving Cato Street. Well, what do you know?
Right.
Up pops this complaint made by Tease Morris about a man who tried to choke her at 221 Cato Street in the exact same way as Jocelyn Martell has just described what happened to her.
So here comes in all the similarities.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the exact same type of attack. So they went and interviewed Tease Morris. She told them the story of how this man attacked her. So now they're putting all this together and they have the address, right? 221 Cato Street. The description of the house matched, I think, what Jocelyn said, the color, everything about it. Both women eventually picked Jeffrey Mailhot out of a lineup as the man who attacked them.
Probably not a hard thing to do.
No, probably not. I mean, this guy, well, he was a pretty average looking guy. When you see pictures of him, he is not a guy that's going to stand out in any way.
Right.
From a head, shoulder up, lineup type picture.
Yeah.
Now, when you're attacked by a man that's 5'3" and weighs 170 pounds, and that is a lot of muscle, that right. weight's made up of a lot of muscle, how many people are running around the town of Woonsocket, Rhode Island, that match that description?
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard to find a lot of people that's going to match that.
Yeah, I don't think there's many. I think Woonsocket's probably a town, if I remember correctly, of 30, 40,000 people. That's not a, it's not small, but 5'3", 170.
It's pretty limited.
Yeah. I think you're definitely, as a serial killer, at a disadvantage when it comes to description.
Yeah.
You would much rather be 5'10", 170.
Oh, for sure.
Because there are many more men in that range.
There'd just be so many more in that category, you know, that 5'10", 170.
Yeah, 5'10", 5'11", I mean, even 6 foot, whatever you want to say. I don't know what the average height is for an American male. I think it's probably 5'10", yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood. It's certainly not 5'3".
No.
And it's not Ed Kemper 6'9".
No.
So, you know, you're at opposite ends of the spectrum, and anytime you are, you're going to stand out much more than if you're in the middle, where most people are. But I think the key thing here, Gibbs, is that things are not looking good for old Jeffrey Mailhot, right? Police are closing in on him. And it was just a few days later that they arrested him at his house for the two assaults, the assault on Jocelyn Martell and the assault on Tease Morris. And really, if you think about it, this is a perfect scenario for them because it allowed them to take Mailhot off the street for these two assaults while they try to figure out if he's the guy that is also involved in the disappearance of these three women. So they get Mailhot down to the station. They're asking him about the three women that have gone missing. They're asking him about the two women who claimed he tried to choke them. He doesn't know anything about any of it, Gibbs, right?
Oh, he's like, who, me?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? I work every day and work out and I sing karaoke every now and then.
I'm just a normal guy riding my Harley going to work every day.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about Mailhot is he denied that he had ever had anything to do with a sex worker. Ever.
Never, ever had to hire one.
Nope. No, let alone the fact that he's out there killing them.
Right.
He's never had any interaction with a sex worker. But as the interrogation went on, he started to change his tune a little bit. Police showed him pictures of known sex workers, and he reluctantly started pointing out some that he knew.
Oh, hey, that's Charisse. Hey, that's Sherry. They're like, how do you know their names if you haven't been with them?
Yeah, he finally did come out and say that. Now, he's not saying he killed anyone.
No.
But he is changing his tune to the fact that he did frequent sex workers.
Right.
After that is when the authorities dropped the bomb on him. They pulled out pictures of his three murder victims. So Audrey Harris, Christine Dumont, and Stacy Goulet. And that was essentially the beginning of the end, right? Now, he didn't confess right away. There was one report that when he saw the pictures, Gibbs, he said something to the effect of, so what are you saying? You think I killed these women? To which the police came back and said, what are you talking about? We never said these women were dead.
Yeah, we never brought that up, Einstein.
Yeah, so how are you jumping to that conclusion? And I think it was at that point that he realized he was done for.
But we know what his biggest mistake was. Anytime you're interrogated by the police, I always say, ask for an attorney.
No, I think you're right, Gibbs, because a good attorney would put a stop to that, wouldn't let him answer certain questions, wouldn't let him be put into that situation.
Right.
Where he essentially fumbles and starts incriminating himself and is digging the hole deeper and deeper.
I mean, I'm glad he didn't ask for an attorney, but sure. I'm just saying, there's no way I would ever sit in an interrogation room without one.
Guilty or innocent. And that's something you and I have talked about before. I don't care if you did it or you didn't do it.
Yep.
You should get an attorney.
If they're going to put me into that room, that means they might think I had something to do with it. And I'm going to have myself an attorney to make sure it does not go the wrong way.
And knowing you, you would say something that would somehow inadvertently implicate yourself.
I know. I would.
I don't know how that would happen. You'd start talking about a Christmas movie that you saw,
yeah.
Not remember who was in it, and the next thing you know, you're in handcuffs.
That'll be like, you know, but they probably used that one type of knife, didn't they? You know, thinking, I'm just like, trying to help them out.
And like they did in Christmas with the Cranks. That's what you'd say.
Yeah, yeah. And they'd be like, yes, that happens to be the knife that they used. And now you are under arrest, Mr. Gibson, a.k.a. Gibby.
Something that you've heard at least once or twice.
Or three.
You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust SimpliSafe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. But really, Gibbs, it was just a few hours into the interrogation that Jeffrey Mailhot confessed to everything. The three murders, the attacks on the two women. He detailed out how he committed the murders, dismembered the bodies, and how he put the body parts in bags and tossed them into dumpsters. But there's one amazing part to the story that Mailhot told police, and that was where he got the idea to dismember his victims in the way that he did. So we talked about it during the first murder.
Yeah.
Or after the first murder had occurred. He spent 2 days with the body. Right. He didn't know what he was going to do. Well, what he told police was that during that period, he was sitting watching an episode of The Sopranos.
A great series, by
the way. It was great. The ending was weird. I think we've talked about that. But it's a very good series. So he's watching The Sopranos or The Sopranos, however you want to say it. So apparently in this episode that he was watching, they used a saw to cut up a body and get rid of it. So you have to imagine this guy. He has killed what is believed to be his first victim. He has no idea what he's going to do next.
Right.
Judging by the fact that he stayed in his apartment with the body for 2 days.
Exactly.
He didn't have a plan. He gets the idea for his next move from an episode of The Sopranos. And you can't blame the show, right? It could have easily been any other crime show. You throw out there a Dexter, a Law and Order, CSI, you name it. It's not like he was witnessing something revolutionary.
No.
I mean, people have been dismembering bodies for a very long time as a way to cover up their crimes. And let's face it, TV and movies have been portraying it for quite a while as well. But for some reason, that sparked in him his next move.
He probably was watching it on TV and looked down at the floor, saw her, and said, I think that might work.
Yeah, because I have no other ideas.
Yeah.
Let's try that.
But I don't have the tools, so I'm going to have to go get them.
So he was already under arrest, right, for the attacks on the two women. Now he's confessed to three murders. So, you know, he's charged with those. After it all came out, Gibbs, people that knew Mailhot were shocked to find out that he was a killer. I mean, everyone was. They all said what a normal guy he was. They just couldn't believe that he could be a killer.
No, you imagine being that guy that he spotted you at the gym or you spotted him. You guys worked out kind of on the same schedule. You were always in there to each, you know, with each other. And you're like finding out that he was this bad person.
Well, and I think about people at work a lot. And I've talked about this, right? I honestly believe if you knew everything about everybody that you worked with,
yeah,
you wouldn't be able to look them in the eye. Not only things that are illegal.
Right.
But, you know, their sexual habits or whatever it is. Everybody's got their own thing.
And they're letting their freak flag fly.
Yeah. Whatever they do behind closed doors is their business.
Right.
But you don't think of them as doing some of those things.
No.
You certainly don't think of the people that you work with as being capable of serial killers. Now, there are some that you and I have worked with in the past that I thought,
maybe.
Yeah, maybe. That person's got the makings of one.
Yeah.
But think about, you know, the person that you sit next to every day. You've known them for 10 years.
Yeah.
You've gone to lunch with them. You've worked hand in hand with them. They don't show up for work for a couple of days, and then it hits the news that they've killed three people.
Wow.
It's going to be shock.
Yeah.
And that's what it was for people that knew Mailhot. Some went as far as to claim, you know, Gibbs, that they were so adamant he couldn't be a killer. So police must have set him up. This is how sure people knew him were, that there's no way that he could have been a killer. That was until the evidence started to come out, right? When they got a search warrant, they went into Mailhot's apartment. They found one of the saws that he used to cut up one of the victims, because I think he had disposed of some of the saws with the body parts,
right?
Putting them in the bags. But I think with the last victim, he didn't. He kept the saw in his apartment. They found that. When they got into the bathroom, that's where most of the activity of the dismemberment, or pretty much all the activity, had taken place.
They found saw marks on his bathtub.
Well, I think pretty hard. If you were dismembering bodies in your bathtub, not to leave some type of saw marks, right?
Oh, man.
Eventually, and I don't want to get too gruesome here, but eventually when you're sawing, you're going to get through completely. Right. And a lot of times you're probably going to hit whatever's underneath. And in this case, that's the tub.
Yep.
They sprayed the bathroom with Luminol, and they said the entire room lit up.
I can't even imagine what happened.
There's blood everywhere.
Yeah.
They eventually found blood from all three women in the bathroom. They found a mop that Mailhot had used to clean up the blood. It was reported, Gibbs, that the forensic team essentially took the entire bathroom up. I mean, the flooring, the sinks, the toilet.
Just removed it all.
Yeah. When they were done, it was just a gaping hole that you could look down into the basement.
Right.
It was like a episode of HGTV, the gutting part.
Right.
The before they fix it part. But they bagged everything as evidence, marked it as evidence. Probably not bagged it, because some of it was pretty big. But
but they took it back to the crime lab.
They did. Yeah. And they sent it for testing. Gibbs, they're going to have so much evidence against this guy. It's not even funny. Police eventually found a video from the local Lowe's store that showed Jeffrey Mailhot buying a saw the day after Stacy disappeared. And they believe that's the same saw that they found.
Right.
So I mentioned it, right? He had gone through this confession. This is how I killed them. This is how I disposed of the bodies. Well, they wanted to find the remains of these women. And authorities spent weeks combing through the landfill where the contents of the city's dumpsters would have ended up. Eventually, they found some remains of Stacy. Opened up a bag that would be rough for a police officer to find.
Sure, it would be.
But they never found a single body part from either Audrey Harris or Christine Dumont.
You know how tough that would be in a big landfill like that?
Yeah. I read it was a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of people combing through this landfill.
I mean, you're talking layers and layers. It would just be, I would think it'd be impossible. I'm surprised they found what they did.
Yeah, I think in one newspaper, there was a quote from a police officer or a captain or lieutenant or whatever that said, you know, when they started out, they thought it was like a needle in a haystack. They really did. So I think they were lucky to find what they did. But I want to talk a little bit about Mailhot's apartment, because one of the interesting things in some of the reporting was how tidy it was. Police described, you know, certain parts of the house as meticulous. Gibbs, I mean, we're talking about things lined up in rows, socks lined up in rows by color. And apparently he had a pretty large collection of videos and CDs that were kept in a very particular order.
Should I go over and look at your CDs and see how they are? You got a pretty large collection over there.
Those are not CDs. Those are DVDs. And I can guarantee you they're not really in much of a particular order.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually, I don't know if he had them alphabetized. He had them in order by genre, but it doesn't matter. But the key is this guy was meticulous.
Yeah, this almost sounds like he had OCD.
Well, his friends later said that they believed he had some sort of obsessive compulsive disorder. So I think you're on the right track. They said that he kept certain things in his left pocket, certain things in his right pocket. And I guess he was constantly checking his pockets to make sure that those things were in the right place.
Well, that would be a sign of OCD,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I think it would be. I mean, I'd take it a step further. His friends talked about the fact that he would take out his wallet a lot just to make sure that all the bills were lined up and facing the same way.
Oh, then, yeah, that's OCD.
Yeah, I'm not a psychiatrist or a mental health professional, but that does sound like some sort of, you know, obsessive compulsive thing. When you're constantly doing the same thing over and over, I think that's kind of part of it.
The one thing about me is you won't see me pull my wallet out.
No. So you have some other picadillos, but
yeah,
pulling your wallet out is not one of them.
No.
At any point, whether to check to see how much money you have, but especially when bills come, checks come at restaurants.
I just don't think the opening to get it out is going to work. You know, somehow I got it in there.
Well, you wear the same pair of jeans every day, and you did have your mother sew the back pocket shut.
Well, that's true, too.
So that makes it hard to get the wallet out.
Exactly. That's a good, very good point. Remember that when the DoorDash guy gets here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the other things that his friends talked about was the fact that Jeffrey Mailhot had some pretty wild emotional swings. They said he was happy one minute, sad and crying the next. I guess he had made remarks to his friends about the fact that he knew he was going to be alone for the rest of his life.
Okay. But that's pretty open mood swings.
Oh, yeah. He was open about it.
Yeah.
If that's what you mean. But he wasn't hiding the fact that he was having them.
I mean, to see your friend cry. I don't know if I'd ever cried in front of a friend.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Because I think a lot of people who are listening are going to say, yeah, I've cried in front of my friend.
Yeah, I don't think I have.
I cried the other night at a movie in front of my family. It was no big deal. I'm man enough to admit it.
What movie did you watch? Was it Hope Float?
It was definitely not Hope Floats. I forget what movie it was.
Yeah. No, I've seen you tear up a few times.
Yeah, I mean, I get emotional easy, and I have no problem admitting that. So Jeffrey was indicted by a grand jury and was set to face a trial for his crimes. The state was set to present over 150 pieces of evidence proving that he committed the murders.
It's a substantial amount of evidence.
They had quite a bit. They had quite a bit, but they would never have to use it because in February 2006, Jeffrey Mailhot pleaded guilty to all of the charges against him. So three counts of first degree murder, one count of assault with the intent to commit murder, and one count of felony assault. It was reported that he cried like a baby in court when the judge handed down the sentence. I did get the sense, Gibbs, that this guy in some way felt some remorse other than just the fact that he was going to jail. Now, I can't say that for certain, but the way that things were reported and some of the comments that he made, I don't know if he ever came out and actually apologized. I think what he said was that an apology wouldn't cut it.
Well, I don't think it ever would either.
No, it wouldn't. But I think that's what he said. Something to the effect that there's nothing that I could say that would ever, you know, obviously bring these women back or be good enough for their families. They were never going to forgive him.
But I'm guessing why he sat in jail waiting for trial, that he had time to reflect, and it probably rushed in his head what he did to those people.
Yeah. So it brings in the question, was Jeffrey Melhot a true psychopath or sociopath? I don't know that he was.
I don't know either. I don't know if you can not find that on him.
Not in the same way that some of the other serial killers that we've talked about were. I mean, they had no remorse, right, with what they had done. I think he did have some.
I agree with you.
Doesn't change the fact that he killed three women.
No.
And attacked two more. But so the judge handed him down his sentence, which was, you know, consecutive life sentences plus 10 years. So Rhode Island doesn't have the death penalty. So that was the harshest possible punishment he could get. Apparently Gibbs, Rhode Island hasn't executed anyone since 1845.
Oh, wow, man.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
So even when, because we had a couple of recent cases that talked about, you know, executions resuming after the Supreme Court rulings, right, and things like that. So even after that happened, Rhode Island said, nope.
So we're good.
We're not doing it.
Yeah.
There was even some articles that I read that some past Rhode Island governors wouldn't allow prisoners to be transported to federal facilities. So if they committed, like, you know, state crimes and federal crimes, the governor said, no way, we're keeping them here because
if we send them to federal,
they could face the death penalty.
Oh,
that's how opposed to the death penalty Rhode Island is.
That's called drawing a line for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I found that very interesting. But even with all the life sentences, Jeffrey Melhot will be eligible for parole in the year 2047. Now, he'll be 77 years old.
I don't get how he would be eligible for parole if he had multiple life sentences plus 10
years. Plus 10 years, yeah. You would think that would negate parole altogether, but I guess in Rhode Island it doesn't. I don't think it matters, right? The guy's going to be 77 years old. There's no way he's getting out.
I don't know if I made it to 77 in prison, I probably don't want to come out. I probably want to be like Brooks.
Yeah, from Shawshank?
Yeah.
I think it would be tough, right, to try to reacclimate yourself at 77 years old, no money, probably no family hardly to speak of.
Well, guess what? If he gets out at 77 years old or not, either way, he's going to be alone the rest of his life.
Yeah. Like he told his friends he probably would. I just can't imagine that he ever sees freedom again.
I think it'd be difficult. First, he's got to get to 77 in prison.
Well, that's true. And that would mean that at his very first parole, the parole board sets him free.
Yeah.
I don't think that happens all that often anymore.
I don't think so. But I'm imagining right now at 5'3", he's probably not having the time of his life in prison.
You think he's not experiencing a Club Med-like vacation?
No, I do not.
Now, he's scrappy, stocky. He's probably able to hold his own. But when 6'8" Bubba comes,
that's right,
I don't know if he can hold his own.
I don't think he can.
Or when 4 or 5 6'8" Bubbas come, you're in trouble.
He's in trouble.
Gibbs, this is a case that jumped out at me for a number of reasons. First of all, you have a perpetrator who, it sounds like from the research, all of a sudden in his 30s decides that he's going to pick up sex workers and strangle them. Now, most likely, he had fantasized about this for many years. We find out that a lot of killers do. The problem with Melhot is he just hasn't given up that type of information, if that happened or not. But he didn't have the type of background that we're used to seeing in serial killers. You know, everyone around him saw him as a normal, fairly stable individual. So the question is, why did he do it? And I think that's the question you ask a lot of times. The problem is he's never actually come out and said, this is why I did what I did. I'm not sure he even knows why. He's talked a little bit about an urge. So that's probably his frog demon that came over him, but that's about as much as he said. This guy's a little scary in the fact that I think he's a person that no one could have seen coming.
Definitely blindsided.
Yeah. I mean, this is the neighbor next door type of guy. The other thing that jumped out at me were the victims. Male hot targeted sex workers, as many killers that we've talked about do.
Right.
But in a lot of the cases that we profile, Gibbs, the victims are individuals with little to no ties. And, you know, a lot of times their disappearances go unreported for quite a while, if they're ever reported.
Yeah, if they're ever even missed by families.
Yeah, because a lot of times they're not. But that's not the case here. His three victims were people with families, loved ones that missed them very quickly, and they reported them missing to police very quickly. The Boston Globe quoted the police captain as saying, "The reason Jeff Melhot got away with this and the reason why we were chasing our tails is not because they were sex workers. It's because they got into a car willingly. There was no fight on the street. There was no abduction. There was no neighbor who would have looked outside and seen a man and woman having an argument." I think that's a pretty good quote.
It is.
And, you know, you and I can riff on it a little bit. We have talked about it in the past, right? The dangers of this occupation, being a sex worker. You know, you are getting into cars with people that you don't know.
Yeah.
On a regular basis.
I mean, it's just, we go back to the hitchhiking stories and about half of the unsolved episodes we do.
Sure.
You know, and there's a reason why they're unsolved, because those people got into a vehicle of somebody they do not know.
And they weren't sex workers. In a lot of those cases, they were just hitchhikers.
Right.
But the same holds true. You're getting into a vehicle with somebody that you don't know. It's a risky proposition. This could be a benevolent person that is just willing to give you a ride.
Right.
It could be a dangerous killer with an urge to do something to you that they can't control.
And it doesn't matter what they look like. You know, I think people, well, he looks like Mr. Rogers, you know.
That's true. It runs the gamut.
Yeah. Just don't get in the vehicle, period. Yeah,
from Otis Toole to Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
To Jeffrey Melhot. I mean, there is no one look to a killer.
Yeah, you can't put a face on it.
No. No, I like I always say, though, if I see Otis Toole walking down the street, I'm turning around and walking the other way. I do think people like a Jeffrey Melhot, a Ted Bundy, people that look just like a normal, average, everyday Joe, they can be a little more dangerous. I think people would let their guard down more around an individual like this, as opposed to somebody that you would look at and say, oh, that guy looks like a serial killer.
Yeah. But for him, I mean, he was able to get him in the car, able to get him in his apartment. Two places that they probably shouldn't have been.
Now, he was a white male between the ages of 30 and 40.
Yeah.
Which kind of fits the stereotypical FBI profile. He stuck to the same MO, targeted women who were sex workers. And Gibbs, I think it's important that he killed with his hands, right? It was up close. It was very personal. Strangulation is often talked about as being a very personal way to kill. Some of the detectives that questioned Melhot have said that they believe he got a rush from selecting his victim, but really it started after he got back to his apartment, right? Once he shut that door, he knew that he was in full control of the life of the woman that he had brought home.
Yeah, that was his arena.
And they believe that's kind of was part of the rush. And then obviously the strangulation, because we talked about it. He didn't kill for money. He didn't kill for revenge. He killed because he wanted to, or he had an urge to, which is, I think, is how a lot of people would describe it. But there was obviously something about it that he enjoyed. And that word scares the hell out of me. He enjoyed it. These killers enjoy it.
He had a thrill out, you know.
They get a rush. They get a thrill. You can use whatever word you want. But to me, the word enjoy scares the hell out of me. You know, I enjoy a nice piece of pie.
Yeah.
I enjoy a lot of things. I can't imagine myself enjoying taking the life of another human being.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't see how anybody could ever enjoy doing something like that.
But again, that's where trying to get into the head of these killers is tough, because you can't do it from that standpoint. No. You can't imagine feeling the same things that they feel, because it would never happen. And then you talk about the families of the victims, Gibbs. The three victims were women that were characterized by authorities as leading high-risk lifestyles. You hear about that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It included sex work. It included drugs with some of them. But they had families that loved them. And when you look at the families, Stacy's family, they know exactly what happened to her. They also have at least some remains of her that they could bury. But when you get to the families of Audrey Harris and Christine Dumont, they have to believe that Mailhot killed them. I mean, he confessed to it. But you have this thing where their bodies have never been found.
Yeah, so they can't bury him.
No. I know that Audrey's mother held a memorial service for her, and I'm sure that Christine's family did as well, but I didn't read anything about it. But that's it, Gibbs. That's the case of Jeffrey Mailhot. He is one of these guys that, I mean, they're all scary, don't get me wrong, but there's something about a person that you would pass every day, a person that would live next door to you and you wouldn't think anything about.
Right.
That then ultimately turns out to be a serial killer. That's pretty scary, because it could be anybody.
You just never know what's going to set somebody off to go down that road.
We got some voicemails. You want to check those out?
Yeah, let's hear those.
Hey, Mike and Gibby. This is Julie. I'm a fellow Ohioan. I called once before. Didn't get my message played on the air. That's all right. I've been a long-time listener. I'm all caught up on the episodes, and I decided I would re-listen to them again from the beginning. And I believe it was episode 1 where Gibby had mentioned a crime happening on Thanksgiving where a man decided to shoot his family after dinner. And he had mentioned that maybe you guys would do that or should do that in the future. And I was wondering if that has ever taken place and I missed it. Or I don't think I did, because I've listened to all your podcasts, but I was just wondering maybe you should revisit that and do that case. I'm kind of curious to know as to what happened. Anyway, enjoy the podcast. Listen every Monday. That's when I listen to them at work while I'm doing my work. But anyway, I'm just rambling now. You guys have a great day and keep your own time ticking.
Well, we definitely appreciate the voicemail. So when you think about going back to episode 1.
Yeah.
Number one, that was 3 years ago. Number two, we didn't know what the hell we were doing.
No.
So you probably talked about a case that you had read something about. I don't remember it exactly, but my thinking is it's not something that would probably be enough for a full episode.
Right.
I mean, it sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I'll have to revisit that.
Yeah, try to figure out what it was. Now, we've never done a Thanksgiving thing. We did a Christmas episode with a bunch of different crimes that happened at Christmas that were fascinating, but not with enough information that you could do full episodes on.
Yeah.
Hey, boys, it's Cambo here from Australia. Just heard you're up to 3 years, and I've just passed that milestone myself. So keep your own time ticking, and boom, pakalanga. Thanks, guys.
So we love Cambo.
We do.
Love to pull up a dak cha. My Australian accent is horrible, dude.
It is. It's not good at all, man.
That was even worse. That was like Jamaican. I don't even know what that was.
Yeah.
So, no, but we love Cambo. You know, he's one of those guys and has one of those podcasts that started about the same time as ours.
Yeah.
And there was a number of people that did. You know, we're talking about 3 years ago. Obviously, many more have sprouted up since then.
Right.
But there were a handful of people that kind of started around the same time that we did. We went through the same growing pains together, and, you know, True Crime Island with Cambo is one of those podcasts.
That was a good one.
Yep.
Appreciate it, man.
We do appreciate it.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. This is Lottie. Listen, I'm calling you because I've been talking on Facebook with a few of my fellow Viking TCAT listeners, and we kind of all agree that it's about time you do a Scandinavian case, so get on that, please. I would kind of like you to do a Danish case, but I think we'd all be just satisfied with Scandinavian. So, you know, just a thought. Bye.
Scandinavian.
So Lottie has been one of our biggest supporters for a long time.
She has.
And we do have a lot of Scandinavian listeners. When you look at the statistics for how big those countries are, man, they are ate up with true crime.
They love it, man.
So we're going to get on it.
Yep.
I don't know. It will be soon. I don't want to promise how soon, but
working on it.
Yeah, we'll do one for sure.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Gibby. This is Z from Pennsylvania. I'm in Philly. And I just wanted to give you all like a quick call just to say that I really, really love your podcast. I stumbled on it like, I don't know, like a couple weeks ago. I was just like Googling a case I found on Twitter. And I just Googled, I think it was the Anthony Soul case. And I was like, Anthony Soul podcast. And like y'all's was the first one that came up. And I've been hooked since then. I've been binge listening to all the episodes. I really love what you guys do. The research is great. I love all the banter between Mike and Gibby. I'm team Gibby for now. You're a really funny guy. And keep doing what y'all do. I love y'all. Bye.
All right. We love it. We love it.
It's a good voicemail.
Yeah. People find us in various ways, but the key is find us.
Just find us, please. And then and, show people how you found us.
Yeah, and tell people about it. And we're always happy when we hear that people started listening, they liked it, they liked the research, the banter. It's awesome.
Makes you wonder what made her search that particular crime, though. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, you know, what I hear from a lot of people is they may see it on, I don't know, a show. And you know how some of the shows are. They you know, if it's an hour-long show, you got a bunch of commercials. They don't give you all the details. They can't.
Right.
In an hour long show. So if you see a show about something, you're like, well, I'd like to learn a little bit more about it.
Yeah. That makes sense.
You know, you're probably going to Google it.
Let me Google it and see what I can find out.
Yep. Exactly. We had mailbag.
Mailbag.
We only had one package, but it was kind of an amazing package.
All right.
So it had a bunch of cool stuff in it from a brother and sister, Bobby and Steve.
Oh, cool.
They sent a little pecan pie.
Oh, did you eat it?
I already ate it.
You already ate
it. Sorry. They sent some beef jerky, which I'll send home with you.
Oh.
They sent a package of M&Ms, which my wife ate last night.
Okay. Yeah, she does like her chocolate.
She does. And they sent a party mix, so you can have that as well.
Awesome.
But the big thing they sent was a Dennis Rader BTK bobblehead.
Yeah, it's been staring at me this whole time. It freaks me out.
I know. I showed it to everybody on the Patreon video weekly mini-sode thing.
You did.
I've never seen anything like it.
It's very
lifelike.
Yes.
And it's staring at Gibby and it's freaking him out.
It is. Yeah.
All right, buddy. That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.